Welcome back to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. There's pretty much nowhere you can live that isn't vulnerable to some disaster.
The river, the street I am on, look at it. It is a river. It's absolutely a river right now.
It's the West. We're technically in the middle of our rainy season. Mountains should be lush with green. Instead, they're bone dry.
Image up, but it appears that it is time for all of us to get to shelter.
It's a sight that's become all too familiar. Boston battered again today, car after car buried under mounds of snow.
So the question, whether you live in Houston or Seattle, is how you turn a relatively small area where millions of people are stacked on top of each other into a place that can bounce back from disaster. Judith Rodin is the author of The Resilience Dividend, Being Strong in a World Where Things Go Wrong. She's also the president of the Rockefeller Foundation. Judith, thanks for sitting down with me.
Kara, thanks for having me.
Okay, first of all, how do you define this idea of resilience?
Resilience is the capacity to prepare effectively, to rebound more quickly if something bad does happen, and then to revitalize and grow as a result of a stressor or shock rather than just return to the same.
So when you think about this idea of resilience, one of the things that people seem to love to do, from New Jersey to Malibu to the coast of Alaska, we love to rebuild in places that are really vulnerable. So how do you approach the fact that people like places where they're put in maybe more peril than the ideal would be?
Well, sometimes it takes a shock like a hurricane or a flood to make people realize how dangerous it is to live in some of these coastal areas. But it's also about building more natural infrastructure, barriers that protect people who are living in vulnerable places, and mixing it up. So, for example, in the New York and New Jersey area after Superstorm Sandy, some of the rebuilding is involving restoration of oyster beds and coastal reefs, which will serve as living breakwaters and natural infrastructure to reduce the wave action and prevent shore erosion, which is a wonderful intervention because it gives the people not only a restoration of a natural ecosystem and flood protection at the same time, but they'll be developing educational programs for school kids around all of this ecosystem restoration. I think it is that multiple set of solutions together in an integrated way that is what we're talking about when we talk about building resilience.
When people say to you, here are our biggest vulnerabilities as a city, what would you say, just from looking at the whole landscape, what ends up topping the list?
About 65% of the cities globally talked about water, either too much or too little. The World Economic Forum reported in Davos this year that for the first time in terms of the biggest potential impact on the world, water topped the list. And so many of our great cities are built on water, you know, shorelines, river deltas, because, of course, that's where shipping was. Those were the desirable places to construct cities. So there's tremendous vulnerability. That absolutely is, I think, number one in so many. Climate change issues, so blizzards, hurricanes, droughts, all of the things that really are being impacted by a changing climate. Aging infrastructure, if it's an old city, increasingly terrorism, inequality, social stresses are coming high on the list for many cities around the world. So that's what cities are confronting, whether they're old cities or newly developing cities in the developing world, where the largest percentage of the new population is going to be. The 2 billion more on the planet are going to be crowding into cities, mostly in the developing world. And these are the stresses that they will be confronting.
So give me a sense of a couple of cities that you thought dealt with some of these issues in a really creative, way that just it struck you?
Yeah, let's take Medellin, Colombia. Medellin was known as the drug capital of the world. It had an unbelievable homicide rate as well. And they tried to confront it with the traditional things that one would think of, increasing policing, bringing in the army and the like. And it just got worse and worse. And they decided to take a good hard look at their geography as perhaps being one of the contributing factors. Medellin has a low flat valley floor, and then it's surrounded by extraordinarily high hills. And most of the slums and the poor people lived in the hills surrounding the main economic strip of the city. So they built a series of gondolas coming up from the main part of the city, like we see in ski resorts.
Right.
And where they couldn't get the gondolas to reach, they actually built escalators into the hills to move people down to the valley. And they connected those people to jobs, to hope, to the prosperity of the city. In 10 years, crime has dropped 91% in Medellin. They put clinics and daycare centers at the gondola and escalator stops. And if you look up in the hills now, you see the villages that were so disconnected. They now are decorated with the most beautiful art on the walls and on the ceilings, so that if you look down from the top, it's extraordinary because the people now have pride in the city and they feel connected to everything that's going on. Medellin has had problems. It's had mudslides. It had a bad tremor since then. But the social cohesion and the economic capacity that was built around that intervention made them very, very resilient.
That's fascinating to me, to build escalators into the hills. Is there a city in the U.S. that you think is doing something sort of as unusual as that, or is contemplating even something as unusual as that?
I don't think we see anything quite as unusual. The place where we've seen the most extraordinary revitalization, though, is New Orleans. When the levees broke, that was clearly a catastrophe, but it was a catastrophe long in the making because it was a social and economic and political failure that the breakdown and the flooding simply exacerbated when the levees broke. New Orleans, in the beginning, as I said earlier, couldn't quite get its act together. In a way, that was a good outcome because the tendency is, as you asked, for people to want to build it back normal, do everything the same, make it look the same and be the same. And of course, that just means replicating the same vulnerabilities that helped create the problem in the first place.
You're waiting for the disaster to happen again.
So now, 10 years later, this is the year of the 10th anniversary post-Katrina. When you look at New Orleans, they've restored their wetlands. They have much more natural infrastructure. They have moved some people away from the most vulnerable areas. They've diversified their economy dramatically so that it's now full of young entrepreneurs and tech startups. So a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Crisis is becoming the new normal. Somewhere in the world, there's a crisis every day. And how you grow and revitalize in response to that crisis will really differentiate you. And New Orleans is a great example.
Now, is there a city or two that's had a lot of trouble being resilient, bouncing back, dealing with whether it was a major crisis, like Hurricane Katrina was a moment in time where there was a major crisis, or something ongoing? Medellin was a crisis that happened every day in some sense. What have you seen?
Well, there are cities that have difficulty, and so we're talking about the difficulty that Boston had in terms of the snowstorm. Boston was amazing in its response to the marathon because they were building on all of these resilience principles. They were very aware, they were adapting, they were practicing, but those same drills didn't get handed off to the new government. And so a lot of that planning capacity somehow was lost. Any kind of crisis can take a city down. How quickly you rebound may depend on how resiliently you've built, how much preparation, how much practice, how good is the communication. And we now have these great tools. So we have big data analytics. We have all kinds of microsensors, things that over and over again, if we use technology effectively, can actually build the kind of capacity that makes a business or a city, even a person, more resilient.
Do you notice an overlap between cities that encourage innovation in other ways, encourage tech startups, encourage incubators, and cities that say, let's think about what global warming is going to do to the city, or what will happen if we have an earthquake, or let's plan ahead for a drought, or, you know, whatever it is? Or are they just kind of two separate buckets
of
cities?
No, they're completely connected. So we see cities that are open to innovation, that are more willing to plan for the unknowable, to really open itself to entrepreneurship of all kinds, not just entrepreneurship in business sectors, entrepreneurship in civil society, entrepreneurship in government. So a tremendous correlation.
Judith Rodin is the president of the Rockefeller Foundation. She's the author of The Resilience Dividend, Being Strong in a World Where Things Go Wrong. Judith, thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.